Well, good afternoon. We're going to begin. Welcome to the last breakout session of the afternoon. This is our third, it's labeled Asia 3, though it's actually only the second presentation, but this is a session on government institutions. My name is David Barrett. I'm a fellow with the Institute or the Center here at BYU. We're pleased to have with us four representatives from various governments in Asia. And we will hear from them in this order that they're listed in the program. And I hope I can get all of these names appropriately right, but I speak only English, and so I will apologize in advance. Somebody had comments earlier today, I guess it was our Japanese speaker, about always apologizing to begin. I will apologize. We'll first hear from Prakash Man Singh from Nepal, who is a member of the Constituent Assembly for the new Nepali Constitution. We've heard some about that in one of our earlier sessions today. Also a member of Parliament representing the Nepali Congress Party. We have then second, we'll hear from Vorivat Amoravat of Thailand, who is a colonel in the Royal Thai Police and is also the superintendent of the Bangkok Department of Immigration, which gives him some involvement with foreign religious representatives who come in and out of the country. He has been had the opportunity to receive some training here in the United States, and we're pleased to have him back now to share with us. Next, we'll hear from Dojamba Zumbarelikam from Mongolia, who is the director of the Civil Service Commission and deals again with issues of immigration and those who come and go in the country, and as well as some regulation in religion, I believe. And finally, Mr. Edison Octoberlin Pasarabu, who is the Director of Christian Affairs in the Ministry of Religious Affairs. Each of these individuals then will give us an opportunity to hear a little bit about their views on government and its involvement in religious liberty. We hope then to have some time for some questions as we conclude. And so we'll just proceed in that order. As we get to each one in turn, you'll want to hear headsets, but I think Mr. Singh's going to be in English. Is that correct?
Yes. Should I start?
Go ahead, please.
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the organizers to invite me to this 16th Annual International Law and Religious Symposium. Before I start, I would like to give a brief background. Nepal has been transformed from a Hindu kingdom to a secular republic in 2007, following the People's Movement, which demonstrated the people power in its truest form and successfully catapulted the country to the path of peace and democracy. The country is currently engaged in writing a new constitution through the Constituent Assembly. There is a near unanimity among the political forces to institutionalize the democracy, secularism, and federalism in the new constitution. Even before 2007, people in Nepal had been enjoying religious freedom and right to religion. Even though there is overwhelming majority of Hindu in the country, Nepal remains a multi-ethnic, multi-religious, and multicultural country. As such, it was felt that it is inappropriate for the state to be seen to embrace only one particular religion. Therefore, the concept of secularism was adopted. During the pre-constituent assembly period in 2007, it had become evident that the constitution building process in Nepal should still be seen through the prism of conflict management for the next couple of years at least. Trust between the key players remained low, and the agenda of the Constituent Assembly, including autonomy arrangements, federalism, and power sharing between institutions, remained divisive and required nationwide debates and consensus. However, the peace process that started 2.5 years ago has already yielded a number of remarkable achievements. First and foremost, the much-anticipated election to the Constituent Assembly was held successfully. A total number of 601 members have been elected in the CA, including 335 from proportional representation system. There has been historic representation of hitherto underrepresented communities such as Muslims and Christians. The challenge before Nepal at present is multi-pronged. While it is necessary to placate the majority Hindus, that their right and freedom will not be infringed upon just because the country has become secular. It is also equally necessary to assure minorities that their right to religion will be upheld. The communal harmony is extremely important for any society to develop, much more for a least developed society like that of Nepal. It calls for clear demarcation between the state and the religion. A recent example of Nepal is clear enough to show how important it is to keep religion away from politics. The previous government led by Unified Communist Party of Nepal Maoists had tried to replace the chief priests at the Pashupatinath Temple in Kathmandu, which is like a Mecca for Hindus all over the world. Around 8 months ago, the then government had decided to install Nepali priests by replacing the Indian priest, even though there has been centuries-long practice and tradition of appointing priests from particular South Indian community. This move by the government backfired as the devotees protested and the government had to withdraw its decision. This episode marked how sensitive devotees are to the tradition and practice. This episode is also an example of how government's intervention can harm the harmony subsisting among the people. As Nepal is engaged in writing a new constitution, these issues are of utmost importance. The major issues, like for example, let us now discuss how the various organizations can help in strengthening the religious freedom. Judiciary basically works within the ambit of constitutional and legal framework to protect and strengthen religious freedom. It formulates specific laws to protect the religious freedom. In Nepal, right to religion and religious freedom are under the fundamental rights. The judiciary can work to protect these laws. The judiciary can even pass strictures in case there is any lacuna in the existing laws. Traditionally, courts in Nepal have stood in favor in protecting religious freedom. Even in the case of appointment of priests in Pashupatinath Temple, the Supreme Court asks the government to maintain long-held tradition. Since the courts are major guarantors for minority rights, their role is extremely important in maintaining religious freedom. Academia. The community of academia, including intellectuals, media, civil society, and NGOs, are always in the forefront for protecting minority rights. In fact, in Nepal, the civil society and academia spearheaded the campaign for democracy during the People's Movement in 2007. In particular, these groups of academia, which is composed of people from all backgrounds and religion, can and should act as independent and unbiased voice to promote religious harmony. For example, when there was an eruption of inter-religious clashes in the city of Nepalganj and Kapilvastu 2 years ago, the academia came together to provide a sadder counsel and help to create harmony. The role of media can also be conciliatory or inflammatory in such circumstances. The media should become responsible and play the role in promoting harmony and freedom. Besides, the academia can always lobby in favor of laws that promote and strengthen religious freedom. They can also lobby for the implementation of such laws. They can act as watchdog for minority rights, government. The government has the most important role to play in promoting religious freedom. First of all, it can pass the laws necessary to do that and implement them. Secondly, it can refrain from intervening in matters that are religious and not so overtly or covertly, any inclination to any particular religion. Equality should be the basis in treating the people of all religious hues. It should also take the campaigns made by civil society and religious organizations into consideration to create proper environment. The ultimate responsibility to create harmonious environment rests on the government. International institutions. The international institutions, first of all, need to demonstrate their credibility and balance so that their voice will be heard seriously by all and sundry. Their responsibility is to see how the law and constitution of any particular country are in conformity with international conventions. Besides, they also need to study the tradition and practice of particular country when making any recommendation. They have to take particular precaution to avoid being seen as discriminatory. Their role must be limited within lobbying in favor of religious freedom and right to religion. Conclusion, this is the right time in Nepal to raise the issues of right to religion and religious freedom. In the new constitution being written by the Constituent Assembly, it will be important to incorporate the provisions to protect and promote religious and cultural freedom. In fact, there is a separate committee within the CA, Constituent Assembly, to look after the cultural issues. The Constituent Assembly members have also come out in support of promoting religious freedom. The minorities and underprivileged communities have found the CA process as a golden opportunity to establish their rights. So with these remarks, I would conclude. Thank you.
Okay.
Please.
Okay, please use headset. Sorry. Okay. ครับ ครับ สวัสดีครับ ท่าน ผู้ มี เกียรติ ทุก ท่าน นะ ครับ ต้อง ขออภัย ที่ ไม่ ได้ พูด ภาษา อังกฤษ เพราะ ว่า ยัง ไม่ แข็ง แรง เท่า ไหร่ นะ ภาษา อังกฤษ ครั้ง สุด ท้าย ที่ มา อเมริกา ก็ ปี 1993 มา อบรม ที่ FBI Academy ที่ Quantico ครับ แต่ ว่า ก็ ไม่ ได้ พูด ภาษา อังกฤษ เลย เพราะ ว่า เค้า ให้ ยิง ปืน อย่าง เดียว นะ ฮะ ให้ ยิง ปืน อย่าง เดียว แล้วก็ให้พูดอยู่ 2 คำคือ freeze กับ you have a right to remain silent ก็เลยต้องพูดภาษาไทยวันนี้นะครับต้องขออภัยนะครับผมมีความยินดีและเป็นเกียรติอย่างยิ่งนะฮะที่ได้มีโอกาสมาร่วมสัมมนากับท่านผู้ทรงคุณวุฒิจากทั่วทุกมุมโลกนะฮะซึ่ง
appreciate being part of this forum. I'm the only law enforcement agent here. It looks like I'm the only one here that's a police officer in this meeting, so I feel a little bit out of place, but I hope that what I have to say will be of value in the role of law enforcement as it pertains to religious matters in Thailand. I'd like to give you a little bit of background of Thailand first. We are a country in Southeast Asia. We have an area of almost 200,000 square miles, a little bit larger than the state of California. We have a population of approximately 64 million people. Religion plays a very important role in Thai life, and it's been this way for a long time. It's considered a pillar of our culture. We have a democratic society that has a king, and Buddhism is the national religion. Of those 64 million people that I spoke of, about 95%, or about 61 million, are Buddhist. About 4% are Islam or Muslim, and just about 0.5% are Christian. And then we have small trace amounts of Hindus, Sikhs, and other religions. Despite the fact that Buddhism is the faith of the majority, both the king and the government uphold and support all religions accepted by the people. The people can adhere to whatever faith they want. Everyone has freedom of religion. They are able to practice their religion as long as it does not impinge upon the rights of others or the public security or morals. Every person should be protected from any act by the state which is derogatory to his right or detrimental to his due benefits on the ground of professing a religion, a religious denomination or creed, or observing religious precepts or commandments, or exercising a form of worship in accordance with his belief which is different from that of others. So, the government generally respects religious freedom in practice, and especially states that discrimination against a person on the grounds of a difference in religious belief shall not be permitted. However, the government, by the Religious Affairs Department, which is under the Ministry of Culture, does not register new religious groups that have not been accepted into one of the five existing registered religions. And that can only be done. We can only register new religions when they have at least 5,000 adherents. And there's evidence to that effect. And only when those organizations are not involved in politics as well. Those five religious groups are Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, Brahmin, and Sikh. Those are the five that are currently in existence. And when a religion desires to be registered in Thailand, it must fall into one of these categories currently. Nevertheless, in practice, for religions that haven't registered, they are able to conduct activities freely in the country. The government will register missionaries who come and preach in Thailand. But the problem is that sometimes there are unregistered missionaries. They are able to come in and teach without being registered. The government hasn't interfered in that. When one comes in and registers, they might have some benefits. They might have an easier time in renewing their visas, so that's definitely the preferred method of preaching in the Kingdom of Thailand. In the past, we found that foreign missionaries, a large number of missionaries have come in using tourist visas and promulgated their religion without informing the Ministry of Religion, the Department of Religion. But we've never arrested or sent them home or done anything. However, from the police perspective, this is a matter that missionaries from some groups, especially we've had a problem with Muslim insurgency in the southern part of the country. And so because of security reasons, we have had to watch their activities because there's been a resurgence of Muslim separatists in the south of Thailand, down towards Malaysia. The groups of extremist Muslim separatists have been causing problems in that part of the country. They try and incite the youth and use religious teachings to teach improper values. If you followed the news or seen some of the news about Thailand, they've actually even tried to drive out monks and killed Buddhist monks in the southern part of the country, and there are regular killings of Buddhist adherents in the southern part of Thailand. So the police has a very important role in there, and that role is to prevent such activities. We're also trying to come up with a strategy of community relations and try and foster understanding and cooperation from community leaders among Islamic leaders and people in the local areas and gather information and intelligence from them to try and prevent such activities. Another important security matter in regards to the Falun Gong sect that China has actually asked us about. There were groups from this group from mainland China. They were arrested while distributing leaflets to Chinese tourists, but all were released without charge or detention. Despite this, the group was able to print religious materials both in Thai and Chinese on a limited informal basis for free distribution. And they made maintained a website that advertised daily gatherings in Bangkok as well. That's just a couple of groups that we have to pay special attention to in Thailand right now, but other than that, we don't interfere in religious matters. Now, as far as the role of the police in maintaining public peace and safety as it relates to general religious matters. The Thai police system is not like the police system in America. We have a national police system. It's not done locally like it is in the United States. We have the power to investigate, to arrest, to initiate cases, legal cases. There's an element of criminal law that allows for religious freedoms as long as it doesn't impinge upon public security or public safety. If there is any activities on religious locations or sites, then there is cause for arrest there, so they cannot criticize or conduct activities which are detrimental to other religions there. And there is an element of the law that allows for them to be put in jail for up to a year if they violate that aspect of the law. And the Special Branch Police is the organization in the Thai Police Department responsible for investigating cases involving abridgment of religious freedoms. And the other element that is directly responsible in these matters is the Immigration Police, of which I'm the director. Of course, we need to be sensitive to those coming in from other countries of other religions, particularly aliens who are coming and going from the country. We provide assistance and service, make sure that they are coming into Thailand appropriately. When they're coming in temporarily, making sure they get their visas. If they're coming in to conduct religious activities or proselyting, then they really should be asking for permission and doing that properly through the Department of Religious Affairs. In summary, it can be said that we do provide for religious freedom. There's no report of abuse of religious freedom or forced religious conversion or religious discrimination in the Kingdom of Thailand. It doesn't matter what religion you want to practice there. There's no report of abuse of that. We as police officers strongly believe that all religions teach people to be good, and so we're supportive of that. We provide the service to people which allow them to practice their religions freely. Again, it's a strong principle in Thailand that all religions teach people to be good, and as long as they're teaching right, peaceful things for everyone and not impinging on one another's rights, then we support and don't interfere with that. The police and all types of law enforcement have a neutral position. We don't take sides. We side with justice and equality and freedom. I hope that this presentation of my viewpoint from law enforcement side has been helpful to you. If not a lot, then at least some. And this is all I have. Thank you.
I appreciate this opportunity to talk about religious freedom in Mongolia. It's a good opportunity for us. What I wanted to talk about was religion and legislative regulation in Mongolia. And I just want to give you a brief description of how things are in Mongolia. There's three sections: the present state of religion in Mongolia, the state of legislative regulation of religion in Mongolia, and application of legislative regulation of religion in churches and a future approach. There's these three sections in my presentation. The nation of Mongolia, which was part of the socialist system during the Cold War, went through a democratic revolution in 1990, and a period of change and adjustment to democracy has been going on over the last 20 years. During this period, every social aspect has gone through a fundamental change as new communications, new regulations, and new values have been established. These political, economic, and social changes have greatly affected public opinions as the public conscience has emerged from a one-party system and many new ideas, freedoms, and democracy have been defined. In Mongolia, discrimination on the basis of thought, faith, or religion is considered a thing of the past, and ingraining this accomplishment is an important part of government policy. One of the fundamental changes that have occurred in the opinion of Mongolians during the aforementioned period of change is the choice of religion after decades of forced atheism and religious persecution. Today, Mongolians enjoy the freedom to choose to worship a religion or to not worship. Public opinion studies show that around 80% of Mongolian adults have a positive view of religion or actively worship some religion. This shows that in a very short period of time, the state of religion has dramatically changed from the socialist generation. In other words, during the previous 80 years, studies showed only 20% willing to admit to religious belief. In the past, the Buddhist religion was the only church serving believers in Mongolia. But going to this church to pray was for many a duty and a pledge paid to reduce the risk of many of life's impacts. Therefore, today's religious situation in Mongolia can be characterized by the following three things. Number one, the majority of Mongolia's citizens participate in religion and have chosen one of the religions. This has brought positive benefits to their everyday lives. Number two, studies have found the Mongolians have ceased to be homogenous in religion, and due to the variety of religious options available, have differentiated by associating with various religious groups and communities. Within the religious communities of Mongolia, a significant portion are continuing to follow their traditions by staying in the Buddhist religions. Studies show over two-thirds of Mongolians are Buddhist. For the Kazakh people in Mongolia, the Muslim religion is experiencing a resurgence. There is also a significant portion of the population that continue to be influenced by the traditional shamanist religion. In addition to these traditional religions, social groups are forming that support and worship non-traditional new religions. For example, groups that previously had little or no influence in Mongolia, such as Jehovah's Witnesses, Latter-day Saints, Baha'i, and the Church of Harmony, have formed groups of believers. There are also representatives of Eastern meditative religions. Thus, there is already a situation of religious diversity established. As religious communities have formed, organizations and churches have formed to represent their interests and enunciate their beliefs. As of the beginning of 2009, there are 450 religious organizations that have registered and received approval to conduct activities. Of these, 230 are Buddhist temples, or 50%, 170 are Christian organizations, 40 are Muslim mosques, and the rest are other religious organizations. The unofficial count of religious organizations operating in the countryside without official permission is above 100. From this, it is obvious that Christian and other new religious organizations have grown dramatically in recent years. The state of legislative regulation of religion in Mongolia. The current legislative regulations for religious and church affairs can be divided into three types. Number one, constitutional regulations. Number two, legal regulations defining the relationship between church and state. Number three, regulations connecting religion with other areas of law, criminal, labor administration, etc. There are important points in the new Mongolian constitution from 1992 regarding the relationship between church and state and regarding the right and liberty of citizens to worship. Specifically, the ninth article is worth noting here. The first section of this article lays out the fundamental principle in church-state relations as follows. In Mongolia, the state shall respect religion, and religion shall honor the state. The second section defines the threshold of separation between state organizations and religious organizations as follows. A state organization may not conduct religious activities, and a church may not conduct political activities. Additionally, the Constitution states that a person may not be discriminated against on the basis of his or her religion, and further, a Mongolian citizen shall be assured the right to worship or not worship religion, and thus, even in states of war or emergency, no law may restrict the liberty to worship or not worship. This idea from the Constitution is reflected in other areas of law. Thus, our Constitution separates religious and state affairs and provides a situation and opportunity to enjoy religious freedom without interference from the state. According to the constitutional requirement that church-state relations be specifically regulated by law, in 1993, Parliament passed the law regarding state-church relations, and this is the first time in the history of our nation that a law has regulated church relations. The application of legislative regulation of religion and churches and the future approach. The law regarding state-church relations was constructed within the ideological and principal framework laid out in the constitutional passages mentioned. However, this law states that religions other than Buddhism, Islam, and shamanism are prohibited from conducting preaching, teaching, or propaganda outside the grounds of their own church, and further, foreign citizens and aliens coming with religious organizations and with the purpose of religious work are prohibited from conducting religious propaganda. Some citizens protested these points and submitted a formal complaint that the Constitution had been violated to the Constitutional Court, and in accordance with this complaint, the Constitutional Court discussed the matter and found the law to be unconstitutional, rendering these points of law null and void. Aside from this Constitutional Court decision, no other changes have been made to the 1993 law in the past 15 years. However, in the past decade, many visible changes have occurred in religious life, and a situation of many religions are existing side by side has become very real, and that is requiring religious regulations to become more specific. The requirements and criteria for granting permission to create a new religious organization need to be more clearly defined and expressed in law. In this process, avoiding restrictions on the right of citizens to worship must, of course, be a primary consideration. However, outside of fulfilling the spiritual requirements of the people, there is now a need for the state to pay attention to some ill effects that have begun to be noticed. Groups that come under guise of a new religious organization and take advantage of the naivety of our youth to advocate suicide, group intoxication, and lewd behavior. The duty to provide an environment in which religion's healthy influence and direction can be established in society and to be vigilant about views that can be poisonous to the lives and minds of the people is not only that of the religious community, but also of the state. For now, in our country, interreligious conflict has not grown enough to attract attention, but some churches and their believers have begun to exhibit undesirable behaviors such as destroying the signs or literature of other groups or distributing propaganda specifically contradicting a rival, and we believe that these issues should be addressed early. In the future, our country will be struggling with updating the law, regulating religion and churches, and making the regulations more specific, as well as adding a regulative structure to the legal framework regulating how religions interact with each other. In the great dynasty founded in the 13th century by Chinggis Khan, many nations were joined together and were given liberty to worship their own religions and kept their own traditions and religions. The historical record shows that legal protections assured no conflicts between church and state and that no particular religion was persecuted. In the modern era of globalization, Mongolia needs to consistently observe just this policy of religious freedom and individual liberty to worship and be careful in better providing opportunities for the many religions to coexist together and freely provide the people's need to worship. In the modern environment, giving people religious freedom. I hope that this meeting will help to provide that opportunity for everybody, and I'm finding a lot of good new ideas from this meeting, and I appreciate this opportunity that we've had to have this experience to meet together and talk about these things, and to learn more about the topic of religious freedom. And thank you, and good luck to all of you.
Thank you for this great opportunity. I'm grateful that I can be here because I can hear a lot of information about the responsibilities of living, of state, and religion. I'm going to give a brief picture of the religion in Indonesia, and also the countenance of religion in Indonesia, and how the Indonesian government relates to all of this. Indonesia is a country with a rather large population of about 230 million people, which consists of various tribes, ethnicities, religions, beliefs, and customs. The Muslim religion is the largest religion in Indonesia, but Indonesia is not a Muslim country, but Indonesia is also not a secular nation. It is a Pancasila country. The values of religion, the diversity of religion and beliefs is something that needs to be promoted and honored in Indonesia. The risk of Indonesia's becoming disintegrated is very high. Therefore, there needs to be a positive acceptance that these differences are a gift and that they add to the diversity of a nation. It is necessary for each one of us to promote the harmony of religious life for the unity of Republic of Indonesia. This is absolute. It requires the right attitude as well as wisdom among the religious communities to maintain the balance between the needs of the group and the national interests. So the government needs to have a policy and strategy that creates and maintains the freedom and harmony of religion in order to form a safe, peaceful, prosperous, and unified society. The harmony among religious communities is something that has to be a priority, because the harmony of Indonesia is true harmony. It cannot be faked. Number two, the freedom of religion in Indonesia is protected by the law, such as recorded in chapters 23, 28, and 39 as well as IPNS 1965, as well as the Constitution in 1969. The freedom of right, the freedom of religion is infinite as long as it doesn't infringe on somebody's freedom. The problem that arises in the field are such things as building of places of worship and missionary work, and also marriages between religions. The people who get married don't have a problem, but the people around them of different religions are the ones that cause problems. We acknowledge that people have different interpretations on the subject of religious freedom. One group thinks that this is limitless, but on the other hand, the other group thinks that the freedom is limited by the rights of others. Because of this, the government policy needs to maintain the religious life of the people. It's not to intervene with the doctrine of the religion. So the government needs to maintain the balance without interfering in the doctrine. It's the government's duty and responsibility to maintain the law and order of its people. And not to intervene in the doctrinal areas of the religion. The government must intervene when one's rights start to bother and interfere with the nationalism of the country. But if a religious group is not interfering with the rights of another group, then the government should not be involved. But when public order is destroyed by a religious group, then the government must intervene and restore the situation to order.
And it too, because of this government's policy.
Therefore, this is why the government's policy needs to maintain religious life of the people. I'm going to give a picture of Christianity. The Christianity is an integral part of the Indonesian people. It is a blessing for the people of Indonesia. There are 323 registered Christian denominations in Indonesia. this variety can become a great strength when they have the will and desire to work collaboratively. And it can be an obstacle when their aspirations and everything occur because of all of the differences. The enthusiasm to grow the churches is great. In 2006, there was a... The situation is getting better after... There was a religion riot in Poso and Ambon, and after 2006, the situation was getting better. Although the pressure among the Christians has not lessened, it's our hope that the Christian denominations are moving towards unity, because the government began to change its policies to help restore balance. The Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormon religion have also come through and are being registered as synods. As sects.
They closed the registration of new churches in 2006.
Say that again.
They closed the registration of new churches in 2006.
I didn't understand. Therefore...
There is also some problems from the outside regarding how they exercise their beliefs. Before the year 2006, there is a lot of incidents where they destroyed and burned a lot of the churches. And because also you can see in the areas in Ambon, an area called Poso, and after the year 2006, the situation is getting better, although the oppression among Christians has not lessened. It is our hope that Christian denominations can be unified in the work of social and health, and we need to have a discussions and dialogues among the Christians themselves to help each other and to diminish the conflict. In maintaining the harmony of the religious life, the Department of Religion of the Republic of Indonesia does the following. Cultivate the importance of society's values and beliefs and strengthen the harmony among religion. Study the spiritual values for the benefit of humanities, to develop multicultural and understanding among the people, to develop an awareness that the differences are reality in the society. In other words, this is the blessing and not the curse. To encourage that the understanding of the religious life is always in harmony with understanding of the unity of Indonesia. Maintain the dialogue between the government and the religious groups, and also within the religious groups themselves. Some ideas to maintain freedom and religious harmony. First, religious leaders should encourage their members to appreciate and respect the difference without sacrificing or abandoning their beliefs. Second, work collaboratively to heal the wounds and trauma due to the riot and conflict in the past by forgiving and promoting the prosperity among the religious community. Third, the harmony that needs to be formed is the one that does not lessen or limit the development of the freedom of religion. It shouldn't be done by force nor persuasion that could lead to the conflict of religious community. Fourth, build forum dialogues among the different religions to talk about national challenges that need to be resolved together. Therefore, the regulation that were given by the government to the people who believes in their own beliefs, they are to help all the people in Indonesia, regardless who they are and what they believe. Therefore, there is conflicts or issues, but we know that the government will never give the opportunity for the people to not working together, but to help them to be able to coordinate and collaborate together as they believe in their own beliefs and religions, to create that harmony between the people. Thank you very much.
Thank you to all four of you. We have 5 minutes to take a few questions. We would remind you, if you do have a question, to please stand. I hope we have a microphone. And we need you to state where you're from so that our translators can get a heads up and can get the question translated for our panelists. So, any questions that you would put to our panel? It's a quiet group and it's been a long day. It appears. Okay, please.
I'm Barbara Colton from the U.S., and I want to ask the gentleman from Indonesia if the government has any laws that would affect the practice of religion by all the different religious communities. For instance, the number of wives a man could have, or something like this. Do you regulate something like that with your laws?
Mungkin diulangi sedikit menyangkut masalah istri bagaimana?
Did you get the question?
Yeah.
Okay. And we didn't get your answer translated.
The government always provide the laws and rules for all the people regarding the human rights. We recognize their human rights in Indonesia and in the administration of the their beliefs or religion, like the Catholic, the Buddhist, and the Hindu, but the others they don't have. I I'm not sure or understand your question regarding the wives or the number of wives. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, down here in the front.
Thank you. My name is Fatou Camara. I'm from Senegal. And my question is for Mr. Singh from Nepal. I think when we talked earlier, you told me that there was a provision for a quota of 33 women in the assembly, the constitutional assembly. And I wanted to know if there is a similar quota for the ethnic groups or the religious group. Is there a quota for Muslim, for Hindu, Buddhist, that sort of thing? Thank you.
Well, thanks for the question. Well, in this Constituent Assembly, well, there are 601 members, as I've already mentioned before. And out of total of 601, 33% of out of 601, 33% are women represented in this out of 601. So in the case of history of Nepal, I should say the representation of women in drafting, in making a new constitution of Nepal, the women representation is a record one, I should say. Because previously, when we had a parliament, well, there would be 3 to 4, 5, 6% women getting represented only. But this time, since the movement was also of the inclusiveness was one of the major issues of 2006 movement. So in the Constituent Assembly, well, women are properly represented, and ethnic city background who had not been represented before, they are also represented in the Constituent Assembly, but not according to religion, no. But with ethnicity, like people from Terai region, we have three geographical region, you know, Terai and the hill and the mountainous region. So from the Terai also, they have been properly represented. From the hilly region also has been properly represented. And from the mountainous region also, people have been represented. And the marginalized people also have been represented in this Constituent Assembly.
Thank you all. We appreciate your coming, and would you join me in one more round of applause thanking our panel?